Talk Sheet. Recorded live.
Hello, you're listening to 42 Minutes with Will Morgan and Douglas Bowles. And today we are joined from the land down under by an individual who I'm going to allow to introduce himself, actually, if you will, right now.
Well, good. Actually, you know, this is coming from the future. This is what's interesting. He is coming to us from the future. Right now is a whole day ahead of us. He is in the future, and his name is Stefan Jablonski. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, yes. My name is Stefan Jablonski from Victoria in Australia. I may have been known as blog writing on prismreptilerobot.net. I do some blog writing on the sinkhole and a lot of Twitter action via my Spectrum Snake Team account.
How did you find this community of Sync? Where was your portal into it?
I was actually researching, the Montauk project. I'd gotten into it years ago, and for some reason it just was ringing a bell for me again. So I got into I did a simple Google search, and there was one of Steve Wilner's videos up there, and the title just jumped out at me, and I just hit play, and from there led me to Jake's work, and pretty much the rest is history.
Cool. And then
you know, I just read your piece in the Sync book too, Synchronous Reading.
Yeah.
So far, I thought it was one of the most explanative pieces.
I felt
that
way, that somehow he was able to bring someone who doesn't have any knowledge of this really into it step
by
step.
Yeah, which is probably why they put it at the first of the book. I mean, it's only like the fourth chapter, maybe?
Yeah, who made that choice? That was a good choice.
Yeah, that's exactly what I intended to do with my piece. And like I said, I wrote at the start that I actually intended on getting that kind of message across in my blog writing, but never really managed to do that. So I thought the invite to contribute to the Sync book was a perfect opportunity for me and try and sort of crystallize that in some way, shape, or form.
Well, one question I have for you, I mean, because not that it's not in here, but I was wondering, I mean, how do you feel about, do you think that the individuals interpret symbols differently? Or do you think that there's some kind of common ground between what we can interpret in these symbols?
I definitely think that that both are possible, and that both people are able to perceive collectively and individually, and the only way that we can perceive collectively is because we can perceive individually, and we have the potential to make our own mind up at the end of the day. When people do perceive things differently, there could be a situation just in the workplace where somebody feels totally comfortable, and yet the person next to them feels like they're being threatened or bullied. It's everybody's got different meters, and definitely both are possible.
Here's something interesting. Something interesting I noticed about just like pure synchronicity within the book was, so Justin designed these glyphs for every chapter, and it had to do with, each one contains kind of a chapter number, and so Stefan Jablonski's piece is number 4, therefore it's kind of represented by this square. But the really interesting thing to me, because I've been studying symbols, like universal anthropological symbols, cross-cultural symbols and their meanings lately, and this woman, her name is Angelus Arian, kind of tries to unpack some of the universal symbols. On Stefan Jablonski's glyph, he's got a circle, which is individuation, and within that circle is a square, and a square is stability. But then within that square, he's got this equidistant triangle, or equidistant cross, which is the coming together of opposing forces. But then there's also the squares composed of triangles, which is kind of this visionary aspect. And so, but then looked at the square from above, you see that it's also the apex of a pyramid, and that your eye is the eye of illumination, you know. And so right here, the entire mystery is in this one glyph. And it's funny because it's such a synthesis of everything the searcher needs to do, which is kind of what your piece does, which, you know, as far as like taking you in and teaching you, you know, like how to read, like your piece does. It was beautiful. I loved it. I mean, I was just, you blew my mind last night, Stefan. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
One of the most interesting things is, like you said, how he equates think to reading, and not necessarily saying that you read think, but saying that actually reading is think. Could you expand on that a little bit more, Stefan?
Yeah. My idea really is that you can't identify a symbol in any way, shape, or form prior to you giving that symbol some kind of meaning, or the symbol giving meaning to you. So it's like you see a dog that you could walk along a street and you could come across a dog and you meet an animal and its owner would come up to the dog and like just make a kind of move and they'll wince. It's like that person to them is a symbol, and there's a context there, you know, that there's a history to the body language, and there's no way that you can identify anything really unless it means something to you. So you start building up a library of symbols right from the start and of your life before you can even read, and those symbols are definitely tied into just surviving. Just they're the cues that you. I don't know whether you programmed. Yeah, well, there is a little bit of evidence to show that there is some programming there that you're ready to see some of these symbols and you're ready to respond in the right way. And the example that I make in the book is the mother's nipple on the breast, this dark areola, which is in a stark contrast, you know, in a contrast in some way, shape, or form to the skin of the rest of the breast, and children, you know, newborn babies, they'll crawl right up to that and go straight away and start drinking, and that's where it starts. That's where it starts. You see the symbol and you go for it, and then it just starts growing from that point onwards. Then the rest of your mother will become a symbol. And then who knows how, you know, other symbols that you do equate to maternal, are balanced with your initial feelings towards your mother or your ideas of what your mother represents to you.
Did you discover that symbol or that interpretation, or did you have you seen that before?
The breast and the nipple and
yeah,
of the circle and the dot. No, that's definitely something that I came up with. I can probably go back in time to when I was a young lad drawing drawing rude pictures on school books, and I probably drew a breast with a nipple like that at some stage. But yeah, definitely. I just whipping it out. In fact, you know, if you want to get really biological with it, it is in fact that you could even equate the same symbol to a the front on view of the cervix.
Or it's also the front-on view of a penis, too.
I've seen,
you know, a lot of people want to equate the sun god, and the symbol is the tip of his penis. But the breast stuff is beautiful, and I've never seen that before, and I definitely want to give you credit where credit is due.
Cheers. If
you pulled this out of the ether by yourself. Tremendous.
Yeah, definitely. And well, it being the symbol of the sun...
Right,
and
the nourishing.
The sun,
yeah.
Yeah, it just works perfectly. Yeah, and the idea just really grew itself. I think that really, you know, really what's responsible for all that happening is just being invited to do it. You know, that I didn't have anything prepared. If you had a look at, you know, what I actually started coming up with, the end piece is definitely nothing like what I really. Even started working on.
Part of you, like I said, you kind of end up getting it all in there, but I loved how you were able to start with that breast and then you moved into the number 8. And then, you know, you took that from the 8 to the ampersand to the Jupiter sign, and then, you know, you just kind of really nice and stepwise just walk you into showing how, you know, basically Indra's net, where one thing will end up reflecting everything else, where I think Alan said recently of Jake that, you know, we're looking at 9/11, but if you want, you can do the same thing with the contents of your refrigerator. You know, if you want to see the entire universe, you could find the conspiratorial connections of everything in your refrigerator if you want it.
Indeed, and you guys have all recently watched Interstate 60 very recently, and when I was watching that that last night, I thought it was basically almost the story of us all watching the movie. Even definitely I definitely agree with it. I could nearly pull anything out of anything, I think.
Well, that brings up, well,
let's talk
okay.
about that, but first let's ask him our goofy question. And then I think we've been asking it wrong, but so we ask all our guests, do you think synchromysticism is a science or an art, or, you know, this question, but, you know, what, art or science? And then now that Christopher Hunter Myers is on, we've opened up this idea of magic, you know. So we've got, you know, this expanding idea of what we're doing. But then the curiosity to me is we're, like, right in the middle of this, and so we don't have any context. We can't see, you know, it's difficult to be in something and know what the picture is. If you pulled back, like, 50 years or 100 years, how are they going to view this movement? Are they going to view it as an art movement? Are we, like, the frontiers of the new science? Or, you know, is this the science and magic the same? How would you respond to that, Stefan?
Well, I think, you know, from an academic perspective, it would be part of the arts. I think this would be if it's going to be nailed down to anything, it's going to be a type of philosophy. And that would be definitely seen as being part of the art. But that classification aside, I do feel that it is an art, and it is that the art that enables it to be wielded as a science.
Okay, to go back to what we were just talking about with Interstate 60, to set it up so people understand what we're talking about here. In your book, you talk about the synchronization of individuals and how one, as a child, is synchronized with their mom and their dad through their DNA, and then also how team members in movies, always synchronized, or watches where they're in the same time and the same place, and then they go out and they're in different times and different place, and you actually, or the same time and different place, and you actually presented the idea of people watching a movie at the same time in different time zones and things of that nature, which is a little experiment, a little magical experiment, as a throwback to our last show with Myers, or C, as he likes to be called. And I just decided on a random movie that I'd never seen, and none of us had really seen, the Interstate 60, especially because you're in Oz right now, which is a day ahead of us, which is a very interesting concept. And maybe before we get back to Interstate 60, you can talk about it a second, because, you know, we're really date-orientated with special dates and stuff like that, synchronicity-wise, and you're always a day ahead of everybody. Do you see your relationship? Go ahead.
Yeah. It's definitely one to get my head around. I spend a lot of the time of the day while you guys are all dreaming, and I'm wide awake. And it is pretty strange, but I mean, if you're gonna take the Jim Sanders route on this one, I'm actually behind. You know, this whole thing is flipped. It's sometimes I actually do feel that way when it comes to how some larger flows seem to actually show themselves. However, it's only until it's not until after a lot of those original ripples will wash over that I'll actually tweak to something pointing to me actually realizing some of these things prior or being in the future. So I feel like that I'm getting very strange feedback symbols. no doubt about it.
So do you think that it has something to do with the day, or do you experience the same thing that we do, like on, say, on the 24th, right? So we're going off about how highly charged the date 24 is for us, which would have been yesterday for you. When we're going
it's
off about 24th,
what? Are you saying today's the 24th?
No, I'm just using that as an example, damn it. No, I'm just saying, like, okay, say today's the 24th.
As if that's what you're saying. I'm not
going off. What?
I'm not ready for Christmas, if that's what you're saying.
Well, what I was actually, the part in the book that I wrote about synchronized watches was really alluding to us all really being on the same time. And if you don't take the globe spinning into consideration and you do zoom out a bit, sure, you know, that there's light on one side and dark on the other, and that's always that way. But if you zoom out, we are all on the same clock. We're all always on the same clock.
Right.
And there's a lot of other layers of what it is that we are that are they're not even aware of it. It just is that way.
Stefan, this came up really early in our 42 minutes history where Will and I were talking a lot about time on some of the early shows, but were you aware that before they settled on the idea of the time that we have where everything is relative, that we both experience noon, but that our noons have to do with the sun and the sky and not, you know, so everything, the trains are going to be able to run on time, but it's based on the idea that of the time zones that they created. But before that, one of the ideas that were floating was the idea of just one time, you know, that it's
yeah.
noon. And so that would be a different, it's interesting.
Because we are in Christmas, and Christmas all has to do with time. And like you said, there's, okay, I know my piece in the Think Book mentions Kronos. I think that Goro Adachi mentions Kronos. And I was kind of, as because I kind of smiled when I read that Stefan mentioned it too, and it seems to be because the way sync kind of manipulates what we perceive as time, that it's one of the first things that somebody who becomes involved in this kind of research starts pondering about. I mean, the time is temporal. So, you know, it's been a quest for man since the beginning of civilization to try to figure out some kind of measurement of time. But, you know, the idea that an individual can be, you, like the movie we watched, Interstate 60, which I've known about for a while, but I didn't know what it was about. And I knew because of the list of actors. I mean, it has Michael J. Fox, it has James Marsden, it has Christopher Lloyd. It has all of these, like Gary Oldman. It has all of these weird sync actors. But it seems like the time that we watched it was the right time to watch it. As soon as I saw that he, James Marsden, had like a magic eight ball that told him the answer, I immediately thought of Stefan's piece. Like, I had just read Stefan's piece, and Stefan goes on about the number eight over and over again. And so it was like the right time that I was supposed to be watching the movie. And so time disintegrates when you're involved in sync. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's definitely a tool that will enable us to realize our non-linear nature and the non-linear nature of whatever this is that we're all doing together.
Well, what
insights do you have, Stefan? So we all, you know, we will propose that we all get in sync and watch this movie I-60, and I've never even heard. And it looked, I mean, it was an interesting movie, but you can kind of tell why it didn't, like, break out. I mean, there was some element. It spoke to us, but as far as a bigger, talk about it a little bit, Stefan. Tell us about the movie.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting movie. It's about a guy who crosses paths with a crossbreed leprechaun and actually gets a wish granted, but his wish is quite a thoughtful one, and he just openly asks for an answer, and it leads him on this crazy road trip, and he comes across a lot of reflections of what he's actually going through in his life. This road trip that he ends up going on is turns out to be what may be visions that he was having when he was in hospital, because he ended up having an accident, and he really is going through an internal journey about himself and really finding his own way. And it's loaded with sync, no doubt about it. And yeah, definitely the experiment. I feel worked. I felt like I, you know, definitely felt like it was made for, you know, the few hours ago that I watched it. It was incredible, perfect timing.
The movie invoked Close Encounters kind of right at the beginning, which is kind of an important movie for me. But what do you make of that? How do you feel about Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
I watched it on the 18th, which was Steven Spielberg's birthday. And it had, so once again, it was throwing back on the specific day that I watched it.
Hmm.
Well, for me, Close Encounters is an interesting film because it kind of is the Jesus or Buddha story where the Messiah figure who's going to go on the adventure, he has these earthly responsibilities, but the pull of the mystery is so great that he ends up leaving his wife and kids, and that has always kind of bothered me, you know. And so I've always been torn about Close Encounters and how I feel about
you know, the selfishness of that individuation story. But then as almost a side thing, it's almost like that movie's a metaphor for cheating on his wife, because within that new realm of exploration, there's this other woman and this other child, and I always wondered if maybe it wasn't just, I've kind of taken this off. But so, yeah, I-60 was...
Well, I see what you're saying, but that's the whole point. Like, the point of the movie is that he is trying to find the woman who would leave for Close Encounters. They make that point at the very end. It's like, oh, I would have so left. And his girlfriend that he actually leaves at the very beginning would not have left. She was like, no way in hell would I get on there. But it's almost
right.
It's almost a symbol for that talking to the other, like, or the connection to the other, the alien being the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because they make, I mean, right when the movie jumps off, they're sitting there talking about, you know, the trickster gods throughout history, leprechauns and so forth, who, you know, raise your sense of consciousness or what's your consciousness by playing tricks, which is Gary Oldman's character in the movie. His name is O.W. Grant. And he smokes out of this monkey pipe, which is like almost a direct Hanuman. Like, he's definitely a puka, you know what I mean?
Mm.
The genie who creates this one wish and totally takes James Marsden out of his reality and drops him into something new. So it's the alien, the contact story again. I found Christopher Lloyd's part in that movie kind of strange, too. I guess the movie was created by the same people who did Back to the Future, but Christopher Lloyd plays weird characters like Al and Angels in the Outfield and, you know, Judge Doom. And in this movie, he was Ray, which is almost certainly a Raw reference. And that's another thing that brings it up, because your piece in the book was all about reading and how reading is sync, and this movie is almost all about coincidence, but it also deals a lot with language and with symbol interpretation. When Ray or Christopher Lloyd is showing him the cards and showing him that some spades are red and some hearts are black, and then later in the movie, Chris Cooper, another sync actor, is in the car telling him that, you know, going through all the lies that he hears. And then when James Marsden gets wrapped in a city called Moore Law, where it's all about law, and Chris Cooper gets him out by language, because law is all written down, language, and how the reinterpretation. And that goes to another question for you, Stefan. I mean, do you think that you mentioned how we string our symbols together to learn how to communicate when we're younger? Do you think that we're in a period where we are readjusting or reinterpreting or restringing or reprogramming our symbols?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly what we're doing with sync. I'm sure that there's been people in the past that have been able to take, say, you know, a pentagram and make it their own, you know, and not just immediately have the labels attached to that symbol that are just handed to them. But that being said, I don't think that for the majority of people that's the way, and that, you know, a pentagram to a majority of people in the Western world would just immediately be a symbol of Satan, straight up. And, you know, that's devil worship going on right there, wherever that hangs. However, with sync, you can, I feel, without getting too deep into what five-pointed stars may mean to somebody else, actually grasp it for yourself and own it and draw whatever out of it, or put whatever into it that you like. It's pretty flexible medium in that way. That being said, I can't help but being, you know, sucked into the collective idea of what some symbols are representing, and I feel that that now we are in a stage where we are getting an opportunity to give our own meaning or add extra meaning to what we do have in our big library of symbols. We're actually becoming a part of it. We're actually becoming a part of the story ourselves, and that is probably where we feel we're getting a lot of meaning out of this. Those that are actually actively taking part in sync or synchromysticism. Yeah.
Well, we actually have somebody else on the line. Alan, are you still there?
Hey, yeah, I'm here.
you've been politely standing by. I was wondering if you had anything to say to it or anything to ask Stefan, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm very happy to stand by. I mean, I'm a big fan of Stefan and really happy to put him, have him involved with the sync book and to have him on this call. Just really like his personality and his mind, and it's really, really a pleasure for me just to listen to him talk. So I was, I just wanted to let him do his thing and sort of get quiet. But I did watch the movie essentially with you guys. Obviously, we didn't all sit down and watch it together, but that was the idea for all of us sitting and trying in our own space, take it in, see what we came up with, and. I don't know. I just thought it was really interesting. I liked Doug. I thought the movie was, there's a reason it wasn't a big hit. It wasn't a great movie, but it was particularly great with wearing sync goggles, as you would call them.
Where did you get your sync goggles, by the way? I broke my sync goggles recently, and I needed to pick up another pair. Do you buy like the super branded name brand Nike sync goggles, or are you doing some like underground hipster version of the sync goggles?
I buy my sync goggles from the 42 Minutes merchandise store.
Oh, yes, this 42 Minutes merchandise store. And so I'm sending you a sync hoodie for Christmas,
Yeah, act now and get a free schizophrenia or something. I don't know. What actually struck me is, this is sort of off topic, I don't really want to go into this, but if we are Interstate 60 for a minute, is just to say, there was a lot of things in there, I thought particularly that we saw the signs, Christopher Lloyd teaches him to see the signs that he couldn't see otherwise. Really struck me, speaking of sync goggles, it really struck me as like they live, where he puts on the glass.
Yeah.
Able to see the sign.
Yeah.
I thought that was particularly interesting.
I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah.
He's using the street sign. He's using it basically synchronicity and the stuff that the advertisements and stuff that he sees.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas in They Live, they would look at those advertisements and they would see just the thick, letters saying, Bay. He's looking at the signs and seeing these advertisements, which is almost like the opposite of They Live, where he's seeing like a bikini-clad girl on a billboard. it's in a weird sort of way, it's like a flip of They Live. The whole sync goggles and the glasses from They Live, I think, are really nice sort of things that go hand in hand.
One of you guys said that the movie was like it was about us watching the movie. Was that you, Stefan?
Yeah.
Could you? Because it's interesting because on my little email. Weekly stuff that I do, we've got this thread about Inception going on right now, which is about Inception is kind of about a movie about making movies on one level. Could you talk about the idea that that movie was about us watching that movie a little bit? Not Inception, I-60, yeah.
Yeah, I-60, yeah. I just there were underlying themes in the film I felt that and that were so grounded in sync. It was almost like I made the They Live connection as well, and then we're talking about coincidences versus inevitability, and reading the signs. There's some really, if you've got sync goggles, if you do have a pair of sync goggles in your drawer, you really didn't need to even put them on. I mean, it was almost like it was dished up for us. It was again going back to the whole time wobble, time warp situation. This movie from 2002 was just that, just served up for us for 2011, no doubt about it.
It reminded me so much of Will. Did you know that, Will? I mean,
what?
So they're going. He's going to Danver.
As soon as he said Danver, I was like, "What the?" Yeah, he's heading towards the Rainbow Club in Danver. And then the other thing was, it could have been a kids' movie, but they were cussing all over the place.
Yeah,
and it was fun.
I didn't think they needed to cuss, but that was part of the character. You know, part of the character of the film.
Well, I feel it was a success. I mean, our little experiment was certainly a success. Somehow that movie, like, joined us all together. It had little hints dropped about, you know, us watching it in a way. I mean, I don't know. It was very, very strange, but it was almost too much because I think I would have to go back and watch it again just to absorb everything. I was too dumbfounded half the time I watched it. Anybody
else?
I had to press pause and, like, walk around the room a couple of times because I was like, is this really happening? Like, I don't know.
Well, I wrote, you are the director of your life. But in this film, instead of a film about filming, it was a film about life as a highway. And so, you know, he was the driver of his life, but he was also open to, I mean, so he didn't create the road, but it was his choice how to go down that road.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, can I throw something at you guys? I'm sure all of us by now have seen this one guy made a video, Christ Bearer. I don't know. It's
Christ Holy Bearer. His name is Joe Alexander.
Yeah, Joe Alexander. Fantastic videos. He has two of them.
Yeah, amazing.
Unreal.
Now, here's the deal. Those videos focus on Christopher Lloyd being the, you know, sort of man at the other end of the tunnel, right? This who opens you up into cosmic consciousness and all that sort of stuff. Now, here's the deal. Doug, before you sent me the movie, Will, Doug sent me a YouTube clip of the trailer. I don't know if anyone else watched the trailer. I saw the trailer first. And here's the deal. Right away, Christopher Lloyd pops up on, you know, in the trailer. You see Christopher Lloyd's face. And I immediately think back to this dude who made the our Christ Bearer video about this magic tunnel. And then in the trailer, this only happens in the trailer, it doesn't actually happen in the movie, the car drives through a tunnel and you see this like crazy glow. But in the movie, and it was like saying, yes, it's a magic fucking tunnel. And then in the movie, they do a sort of similar thing where he actually drives through the tunnel, and that's where he finds sort of he drives through the smoky tunnel, and it's the same thing as, like, the magic pipe. He drives through the smoky tunnel, and suddenly he's in the magical land on the other side. It was exactly the same thing as these Christ Bearer videos.
A Holy Man Christ Bearer, Christ Miller. But it's actually from the creator of Back to the Future. And same
what,
guy
Robert Zemeckis?
Well, that's what it says. It says from, if you look at the movie poster, or if you go on International Movie Database,
it says from the creator of Back to the Future for the Interstate 60.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as soon as, that's all I could think about was Joe Alexander. As soon as I saw him in a doctor's outfit and his name was Ray, I was like, well, what the fuck? And the fact that Michael J. Fox is in it is kind of like, it looks intentional as hell, really.
Definitely throwing the two of them in the movie together. I just thought it was interesting, the tunnel aspect, which, you know, in the Back to the Future mythos, it doesn't seem that important. Only this guy recently has sort of drawn attention to it, but it doesn't seem otherwise.
The thing that's crazy about the Joe Alexander films is it's all the same tunnel. The same tunnel and Buckaroo Banzai, the same tunnel, and Back to the Future, the same tunnel, and Roger Rabbit, and the same tunnel in Pagemaster, which is, again, an individual figuring out that he's in the story.
Hmm.
How much? Wait, 2-minute warning. We have
a minute to wrap it up. So go ahead, Stefan. Do you have anything, any final comments you'd like to make before we cut out? Message from the future.
It's actually the 21st of December today, right now for me. So this is, you know, exactly a year until the 21st of December next year, the ominous 2012 date, which is kind of interesting. But, yeah, I guess, you know, if I want to give out any parting words, I definitely would like to go along with the theme of my chapter and I guess the underlying advice that I'm trying to give there, not really advice, but the suggestion, I guess, is that you definitely don't have to subscribe to any fixed ideas about anything that you're seeing. It's really be as flexible as you can at any given time, and you know
that you did wonderful. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you.